It's Act One. Ron Brinkley was our field reporter tonight. Susan Stone is our engineer. I'm Will Roller.
I'm Anthony Fest. Good evening.
Time is 6:30 here at KPFA or KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. The Body Blow, one of eight radio ballads by Peggy Seeger, Ewan McCall, and Charles Parker, is about the psychology of pain. First broadcast in England in 1962, the Body Blow came out of the British folk music movement and is distinctive for the stories of five people disabled by polio, intercut with the powerful lyrics of Seeger and McCall. Tonight we hear The Body Blow, part two of a two-part presentation on KPFA's Trial and Tribulation. And this program comes from a true audio archive treasury. And why do I say that? It's because the radio ballads created between 1957 and 1964 were really revolutionary for using raw stories, not related by professional actors, but by those living the stories themselves. At the time it was, and it still is in this public and commercial radio age, unique to hear stories using sound, music, spoken word, and ambient effect to tell the tale. Elaborations, especially through sound, were very unique at that time, and regrettably still are unique today. We should have more of them. And now, The Body Blow, Part 2, on KPFA's Trial and Tribulation, by Peggy Seeger, Ewan McCall, and Charles Parker.
I wasn't afraid while I was in the lung, at all, ever. But I was afraid to come out. I can always remember Sister pulling me out a little bit every day, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, extended periods. And then she said to me one morning, Mrs. Hagger, we're going to take you out to lung today, and you're going to lie on the bed. I was quite happy with that. But when night came, I got a terrific fear. I wanted back in it. And in the morning, she said, well, you're still here, aren't you? So I said, yes, it looks like it. So she said, well, look, you're not going in the lung again. She said, and nothing will happen to you.
I used to find myself looking at people. I was so frightened of forgetting walking. You see, I thought perhaps memory came into it. And if anybody stopped and turned to look at their nylon, see if their seams were straight, I could feel it as she was feeling. And I was thinking, yes, she'll have the weight on that leg now as she turns around to look at the other leg with her leg back, you know, see if her seams were straight. But I remember myself doing that so many times. I just think that might help me.
Try to remember walking creates the design, the sequence of movement, and then keep it clear in your mind. The coordination, the exact relation between toes and ankle, the calf and the knee and the thigh.
When you're lying down there, you feel so much like a landed dab. You feel more like a moth on a pin down there. You don't feel equal to anyone. You see, you're lying so flat, terribly laid out. But, you know, I had this bell in between my fingers for the nurse, and I could press it. And then they started giving me sandwiches on my chest, and I had to get my arm up from here to get a little tiny, they're all tiny sandwiches, to put it into my mouth. It was a great effort. It took me a long time, but it was nice to be able to feed myself. And of course, having the use of my arms helped me an awful lot to alleviate my discomfort. And I started on physiotherapy then. Terribly tiring. I mean, really, when you think of it, these physiotherapists, they're terribly strong. I mean, they really are pushing against you. I mean, it's like all in wrestling. She's got your arm going back and forth, and again, and again, and again, and again. Had a great big woman of about 6 foot. She had red hair. As she sat down for a rest, she said, "Oh, I'm exhausted. You know, she's putting me through it. Up and down, up and down. Just like all in wrestling, you know, pushing and tugging and pulling. It's all good for you, but, oh, it's exhausting." My physiotherapist. Because it stops you from getting, when you've been stiff, you know, you feel all your limbs loosening up, and that does alleviate a lot of the pain. All these things that you never knew you had, like hamstrings, when you lie there so long, they shorten down. Of course, when they start again, they've got to pull them like elastic to their proper length. And of course, you have muscle charts. They chart every muscle in your body. That means they have sit there with a chart, and they've got every muscle listed down. And then they go through the motions of asking you to move these various muscles. Whether you can move them or not, they can tell with their fingers on your limbs whether there's any reaction. And if there is a reaction, they can tell what strength it is, and they put it down on a chart. Because most of mine were noughts, and then the next month they were noughts, and they just get tired of saying nought. They used to say zero, nothing, nought, nought, zero, nothing, you know, just to make a change. That's done in front of you. Whether they think of you as a human being while they're doing it, I don't know. I mean, perhaps they don't really know. They're not really concerned about you. They are and they aren't, you know what I mean? I don't think they're thinking to themselves, "Oh, this might depress her, don't let her listen." They're just carrying on all round your body. They're all gathered round you. And you have to get over that embarrassment of lying stark naked while they all peer down at you very disinterestedly. And, of course, one's sitting there giving you a smile now and again. You manage to give a smile back if you can make it. With face as red as a beetroot. Because, you see, it's such a lengthy business. It's not like there's a quick flash of you in the nude. It's a rather lengthy process, you know. Somebody's probably got an elbow on your stomach one end while they're looking at your feet and saying, "Now waggle your big toe," because you're going blue in the face trying to move your big toe, and you're sure it must be moving with the effort, and you look down at the toe. It's best not to look, really, because if you're not looking, you're sure that your big toe's moving, but if you open your eye, you see the ruddy thing still stuck up in the air, it's not even moved an inch. That depresses you immediately. Of course, they're all very cheerful, you know. They say, "Oh, never mind, keep trying." You see, you can see it's not moving. You feel that with such concentration and willing everything, you know, you're saying, "Move, move, move." And you think that it must move.
The situation.
Paralyzed.
My left arm, completely.
Make the physical drawbacks become of lesser importance.
A very weak half arm.
Accept it and forget it.
You know I'm trying to.
You can eventually.
Difficult.
You can't.
Hate it.
Learn and.
Learn to be able.
Able to.
Try being able to get on with it.
Do it.
Though my body is defeated, still I'm alive and heart and brain search for roads across the wasteland to the living world again.
The exuberance of being able to do it. It's tremendously exciting.
At first, the simplest task defeats you, and your heart breaks every day. Till your stricken hands remember, and you will them to obey.
Then I began to realize that perhaps life wasn't so bad after all.
For the rest of my life, my body will lie here. numbed and helpless, still I'm a man, and a restless mind still drives me, so I do the best I can.
That seemed incredible, that I could do it. It was like rediscovering something.
My dear friends, I'm writing this letter, though my hands lie dead and still. But a man is more than a pair of hands when the mind joins with the will.
Even though we're down, we're not out.
The body makes its adaptation, and it learns to improvise. But the spirit can't surrender, it must conquer or it dies.
And I had lots of pulleys put above my bed, which I was told that I was to hang on to and help myself. This was new fangled for me. I used to be chomping all round that bed, and all these darn things used to ding, ding, ding all the way down the bed. It was like a tram. It was all little hangers and pulleys and rattles. And they used to call me Budgie, because I was like a budgie in the cage. And I was always hooking from one to the other, like monkeys. And everybody had them. And it was rather funny. Anybody came in the ward, we all hung on these things like a load of monkeys in the zoo, all peering forward. All the other people,
they took me down to the occupational therapy department.
Very bright and jolly.
Where they train you, you know, to work away with one hand.
And I heard the word polio, but I didn't exactly connect it with myself, you know what I mean?
I got the shock of my life when I went down there.
I think that it's just a word you read in the papers, and
suddenly
you don't really think when you're saying it.
It struck me that I was a disabled person. That I was one of these people.
That's that awful thing those people in Kent got, you know, isn't it a shame?
What recovery you don't get within 6 months, you can say you've had it. If you've got a flicker, well, then you can say in a year, that flicker will be stronger. More or less.
Yes, I think some are more adaptable than others. I mean, I know a lot of people like myself and keep in touch with them, but I know very, very few that have given up. Very few. Most of them can do something.
After 6 months, I got the use of my left leg back, for which I'm very grateful. It allows me to type. I can even draw with my left foot.
When the old way will not serve you, then a new way must be found.
Personally, I'm pretty vain, and I was put into a jacket when I came out of the line. And it isn't a pretty thing, it's a big... Look, you look rather like a spaceman. And I was in that jacket for a year, and I did my damnedest to get out of it. Because it was ugly, legs and arms didn't matter. First of all, was breathing. And that was the day the doctor came to me to explain the principles of frog breathing, which is taking mouthfuls of air and pushing the air into your lungs with your tongue. And you have to conquer the feeling that in fact you're not breathing, because you're not conscious of air going down your nose. It's the sensation of holding your breath, because you have to hold each gulp as it goes into your lungs till the next one goes down. Then when you've got sufficient, you let it all out at once.
What is gone forever. What is left can learn again.
I think to be lying flat is very bad for morale. And when people come and look at you as if you're a cabbage, it blurs you even further. And if you suddenly sit up a bit, and here you are, independent, typing for yourself, saying what you want, nobody else's assistance. It gave me satisfaction, pleasure, pride, self-respect.
Having the usual nice time, taking on the swings and going on the beach, seeing familiar places.
Every day and week that passes sees you growing stronger. Just a little more patience, for you won't be here much longer.
Life, there's hope, the earth still goes on turning. Now it's time for you to teach the lesson you've been learning. Day still comes, the night still falls, and you must learn to live then. There are those who love you and who need what you can give them.
I just begin to forget what her voice sounded like and face, you know. When she did come in, she seemed such a titchy little thing. And she said, "Hello, Mummy." And she was very good. She wanted to sit up on the bed, and she was interested more in the hangings on the bed, and said, "Could she sit on my lap? Would it hurt my legs?" Because I could hardly speak, actually. And she lisped, and I'd always denied that she'd lisped. I always said to everybody, "She does not lisp." And I said, "But she does lisp." I said, "She doesn't." And every other word with a lisp. And I thought they were right. I hadn't heard for so long.
I seen them come and I seen them go, and often I used to wonder when my turn would ever come. Would I ever get home? And I was in there for a year.
While there's life, there's hope, so work and watch and pray. Drive each tortured nerve and muscle until it will obey. Wasted limbs must learn to work each day a little longer. Bear the pain and try.
I just was so terrified they were going to send me home. I didn't really want to believe it. So I said, at least let me try.
I began to hope a little when they started to make me a spinal jacket.
If I go home and I've never tried, I'll always have a thought in my mind that I could have walked if only you'd have given me the chance.
The doctor came in and he said, I think with a jacket on, she'd be able to walk about.
Well, I was able to do a sort of a shuffle, you know, these leg irons, because I wasn't using my legs in them. I was really elevating my body on my arms.
But when they did come with this jacket and the dentist's headrest for my head to keep me rigid and to hold it, because it would have just fallen, I thought, no, but I can't face the world like this, can I?
But you see, to do a 3-minute walk took me 2 hours.
And then again I said, well, there's others have done it. Why can't I?
Unfortunately, I'm still on a respirator. And even that doesn't stop me going out, because I take one with me. A smaller version, but it does the same job.
first day they took me out, I felt it was wonderful. We went into the country, and the fields were green, and there was lots of space, and trees, and the sky. And they're only little things, but things I didn't realize quite how much I'd missed them until I saw them again.
It's goodbye now, I'm leaving you this morning. And a thousand thanks for all the help you gave me. For the strength of will, kindness and the patient skill. And all the things that helped to save me.
Safety of this little world I'm parting. From now on I'll learn to abide in the world outside, so another phase of life is starting.
Home again with the ones you love this morning. An end to the lonely months of hoping. Back to work and strife and the cares of normal life. Now you'll have to show your skill at coping.
But when I did
all on my own
come out of hospital,
very frightening at first.
It felt
ward with about 30 people
for a year.
Felt very lonely.
Like coming out of prison. The outside world was very strange to me.
The first night, just a dead silence, you know.
I think the homecoming is the frightening part of it, because it's then you realise that you aren't capable of doing a lot. And of course, at this time, when I came home, my daughter was in Scotland with my sister. And I was worried. I wanted my little girl. Should I bring her home and try, or leave her with my sister, who was capable of doing everything for her? And I decided to bring her home with me. And then gradually I found that I was able to do for her.
The doctor couldn't come because he had a wrinkle on his own tongue. Here comes a nurse with the red hot poultice, slaps his tongue and takes no notice. Out is the patient at the box. No, says the nurse, no, it's not.
I do all the small things that have to be done every day.
You'll have to learn how to do them in some other way.
All of the things I once did in the house through the use of my hands.
Have to learn how to manage the best that you can. It lies in the will to win.
All these things I wanted to do myself. I didn't want anybody to help me. Help, I used to hate it. Even my husband used to come to help me. And it was times when I didn't want him to do so.
And of course I had to learn to be able to dress myself. With half an arm, I had to find new ways. They didn't come quick enough for me. But of course, as time went on, putting my vest on myself. But once I'd achieved that, I was like a baby with a new toy. You know, I can do it myself now. I don't need anybody to help me.
I was once a person who'd rushed about, and I can't bear being slow, you know, because I would go tearing towards the kitchen. Very good for a wheelchair. And of course, once I got clever at it, I quite enjoyed nipping through with not an inch to spare, you know. Especially when the bacon's burning or the kettle's boiling or something terrible's happening in the kitchen. I can't get it quick enough.
You're playing your part, you're managing, making do. Though you find it a struggle to see it through. You try and you fumble, you sigh and you grumble, but it's better than being dependent on somebody else. The more you endeavor, the more you will find you can do.
You'll find that you still can be useful to somebody else.
The Body Blow, one of eight radio ballads by Peggy Seeger, Ewan McCall, and Charles Parker about the psychology of pain. And this evening on KPFA's Trial and Tribulation, we presented part two of our two-part presentation of this archival piece, which was first broadcast in England in 1962. The Body Blow coming out of the British folk music movement and distinctive, as you have heard, for the stories of five people who were disabled by polio, intercut with the powerful lyrics of Seeger and McCall. The other radio ballads that they created between the years 1957 and 1964 were the Ballad of John Axon, which was about railway men, the Song of a Road, which was about road builders, a herring fishing community ballad titled Singing the Fishing, the Big Hewer, which was all about coal miners, and the one about teenagers, which I hope to get soon, which is titled On the Edge, and finally a ballad, I'm sorry, two more ballads, The Fight Game on Boxers and The Traveling People, which was on Britain's Nomadic Peoples, The Traveling People, which was the eighth of the eight ballads that came out. I'm Susan Stone. The time is 6:57 here at KPFA or KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. Next week, Trial and Tribulation presents The Prisoner's Defense by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. This is a courtroom mystery by one of England's most celebrated writers of intrigue and suspense. So we'll be visiting that next week. Dramatic reading of The Prisoner's Defense by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle at 6:30 p.m. on Trial and Tribulation.
KPFA listeners, this is your station. What do you want from KPFA? How can we serve you better? To help determine the answers to these questions from the perspective of the disabled community, KPFA is holding a meeting on Saturday, August 18th from 1 to 4 p.m. The meeting will be held at North Berkeley Senior Center, located at the corner of Hearst and Martin Luther King Jr. Way in Berkeley. For more information, contact Adrian Lauby at 707-795-2890 or email Adrian at adrienne@monitor.net.
Kicking off a little bit early with that Joe Frank music. Joe Frank, storyteller from the darker side of the urban jungle, coming up in about 90 seconds. So I'm going to take that opportunity to give to caller number 5 this evening our book giveaway, which is for this evening, Retribution, New Stories by John Fulton. Stories set in such compelling places.